So we're going to kick off this concept of perfecting podcasting, right? We talked, or this whole idea of leaning into your channel and choosing which medium that you're going to use. I think the interesting part about what can happen with podcasting, let's see if my clicker works here.
Big button.
Yeah.
Oh, we lost the clicker.
Let's see if we can. There we go. Now I think. Yep. There we go. Okay. Thank you. I think what can sometimes happen initially with any channel, whether it's YouTube or podcasting or whatever platform, is that we think, oh, well, this thing has been around for a long time and I'm just starting and there's so many people that are already doing it, so I'm late to the party. And what we want to just kind of dispel is go through some of the data on podcasting and where things are at right now. So this is podcasts on Apple. You can see that there are out of the 2.4 million podcasts that are on Apple, only about, I think it's 400,000 are active, which means that they have published an episode within the last 90 days. So there is an incredible number of people that have done what we see all too often advisors and anybody else do, is that they start something and then squirrel, right? And they get distracted and then never hit publish again.
There's even a term for it, right? It's pod fade.
Pod fade, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it just fades out. It isn't deleted, it's just gone. Yeah.
Having said that though, the benefit that they have that anybody else that isn't podcasting is it's still there. Mm-hmm. It can still be found. But when you contrast that to where the podcast listening habits and trend is going, there's, right, 2021 to 2022, we've seen a jump, and new data is coming out literally this week at Podcast Movement here in Denver. So we'll be curious to see as 2023 continues to go forward. The interesting thing is out of the listeners, more than 80% expect to spend 7 hours of their week listening to podcasts. And a heavy podcast user will spend time listening to 8 different podcasts. Again, if you're a podcast listener, just do your own inventory. How many do you listen to on a weekly basis consistently?
6 to 7.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Same thing. And mine range from sports to business to entrepreneur, flipping, like buying businesses. Acquisitions Anonymous is a new one of mine that I enjoy, you know, looking at every single time. The point that I'll make there is I don't listen to every single episode, mm-mm, but I still see the episode and I'll look at the title. So it's brand awareness. Even though I'm not listening to it, I'm still aware. They are still positioning their brand in front of me, even if I'm not consuming the actual content that they have created.
Well, and as we see those numbers tick up, it's really displacing a lot of that anywhere other than in front of a screen, like content consumption time. So you're on a plane, probably podcasts. You're in your car, podcasts. You're out for a walk, probably podcasts. So podcast listening just continues to expand because it's a preference that's shifting over time. That's how people want to engage with their content and consume it. And it's so much more specific. You even talk about sports. You don't necessarily listen to, you know, the Mike and Mike show on ESPN anymore. You're probably listening to a podcast about your specific team or teams from your specific city because they're able to cover it in such a specific way that the content's more engaging. And that's part of the opportunity that we have, is to really create powerful, engaging content that really applies to our audience.
Yep. Yeah. And again, there's just like this last point right here, 45% of podcast listeners have household income of more than 250. What do we all want to do? We want to work with people that have obviously disposable income where we can actually do some planning for them. So it is a, for lack of a better word, affluent listener base that we are all marketing to. So the idea here is like the number of podcasts out there while growing is still the ability to gain listenership and, you know, gain that ear real estate is amazing. The one thing that I love about podcasting that is almost that is true to really only podcasting is the intimate relationship that you develop with the listener. Granted, it's asynchronous, right? Because you can't get their feedback by listening, but you're literally in their ear. YouTube, you could say the same from a visual standpoint, but that one-on-one relationship that you have with them is unlike any other medium. So it's been it's just been awesome. Right. So what are some good podcast stats? Like, okay, how do I define success in this? What does this mean? So if you get 26 downloads within the first 7 days launching, like 26, right? Sometimes I think we feel, oh, I'm not going to launch a podcast because there's no way I can get 1,000 downloads. It's like, stats don't tell me that, or stats don't support that definition of success. Top 25%, if you can get 72 downloads, you're in the top 10% of downloads. If you get 231 plus downloads in the first 7 days, and you're in the top 1% if you're getting more than 3,000 downloads in the first 7 days. My point in all in this is a very subjective graph because a lot of it is dependent upon your audience. If you're trying to do a generic, quote unquote, generic retirement podcast, your sample size is a lot bigger, or your audience is a lot bigger. For me and my type of avatar that I'm looking at, you know, when we're getting 1,400 downloads in the first 7 days, that's awesome given the size of the audience that we have. If there's only 33,000-ish optometrists nationwide, to get that exposure is pretty cool. Now, if I'm Ben Brandt or Jared or Taylor or anybody else, it's maybe shouldn't throw you in with those guys that are doing a retirement focused podcast, Roger Whitney, right? Retirement Answer Man. There's a much bigger sample size of people that are looking for retirement planning. So my point in all this is, don't think you have to put your definition of success through the filter of what is the size of my audience. What are the benefits of podcasting? I don't think we have to spend a whole lot of time on this, but for what it's worth.
Is anybody not convinced that podcasting is viable?
Right.
We talk about that.
Just a little bit worried that it's getting oversaturated. I know that there's too much competition for the listeners here.
So the question, or the comment / question was, is podcasting getting a little too saturated for where we're at in the stage? And I would go back just to the percentage of Americans that are still not even listening to podcasts, that don't even know that they exist, right? More than 2/3 of Americans still aren't even listening to podcasts. And I think where I would also answer that is the precipitous fall off of podcasts that are being put out there versus podcasts that are actually being produced, right? Going back to, maybe I shouldn't do this. There's a lot of clicks, right? they're out of the millions of podcasts that are on Apple, the ones that are producing new content, there's only 15% of the podcasts out there are actually still producing new content. So there is a very long tail of extinct podcast.
And
basically try and then they stop.
Yeah. And I think, again, tying it back to, as Adam was saying, what are you trying to get to? He's trying to connect with 1,300 optometrists out of 33,000. Massive number of them, relatively small. You know, he's not the Tim Ferriss show, and he doesn't aspire to be. If we look at like My First Million, right, which is Sam Parr and a couple other hosts, you know, we're not trying to be them. I don't think anybody in this room is trying to be them. But whatever your niche of clients is, the more specific you can make that and the more applicable to them you can make your content, the better your hit rate is going to be. So I think the question to ask yourself is, if you're targeting retirement in Akron, Ohio, is there a retirement in Akron, Ohio podcast that already exists that dominates that market? That might be difficult to get in there. Absent that, if you're specific and that's who you want to connect with and you have a unique message for them, it's not saturated, even if they're already listening to 6 or 7 or 8 other podcasts every week. If you provide relevant content, you're going to be able to get in.
Adam, do you have a question?
Yeah, I just wanted to share from the other end of the spectrum as someone who does. Yeah, from the other end of the spectrum.
Yep.
Take three.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, the other end of the spectrum. So yeah, I'm not Adam, and I'm certainly not the retirement answer man. And I started about,
I wasn't either in 2018.
right. And actually I am Adam, but I'm not, you know. Mr. Schmer. So I started about a year ago. I only do one a month. And you know, I was actually partly inspired by Taylor Schulte on another thing where I said, well, why should I write another blog on Roth conversions and whatever? He said, well, effectively, you know, you do you, right? No one's going to write a Roth retirement blog like you do. So you go ahead and do it. So anyway, in doing the podcast, and I could talk about more about why, I mean, I had a passion for it, right? I don't even care if it makes money or not. I did not want to go to my grave not having tried this because people kept telling me, Adam, you need to do a podcast. So anyway, I really enjoy it, but it answers questions that my clients ask, right? So I just did one. I keep getting questions about real estate, right? Should I buy a house? Should I sell a house? Should my kid be buying a house? So I did a podcast on the state of the housing market. So now I just say, listen to my podcast, you know, long-term care. I was doing a seminar. One of the sections was on long-term care. I was able to say, just listen to the podcast, you know, so we can go skip this section. But the other, you know, this weekend, someone saw me in a parking lot. They rolled down the window and said, hey, Adam, I love your podcast. Listen to the one on long-term care. Listen to the one on the state of the housing market. Now that character, he would never have even known to look up the retirement answer man, right? He did it because it came from me, right? So you are, it doesn't matter how small your audience is, you're going to have an audience that's your audience. And I think it, you know, it goes into the flywheel thing,
yeah,
of it builds into the business. So I would advocate it, even if you just get 10 downloads a week.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great medium. And it doesn't, like, I know I kind of threw the podcast that haven't produced content in the last 90 days under the bus. There's nothing that says that once you start a podcast that you have to do it indefinitely. I know we talk about the idea of starting it. If you're not going to hit record on episode 100, what, don't hit record on episode one. But another play to that is, hey, record a 10 episode series and tuck those podcast links in your email marketing newsletter that goes out for people that sign up for your newsletter, right? Our 8 email drip campaign that we send out, I could create an 8 episode podcast series that introduces our firm or talks a little bit more, mm-hmm, about our process. I could do a podcast on our client service model. Like, there's all kinds of different ways that you could repurpose the medium of podcasting. We think, yeah, of it primarily through education and awareness, but it's just a platform.
Larger companies do internal podcasts for their teams.
For training. Yep.
Yep.
That is a side benefit. That was a great training platform for John when I, and Kate as well, now as she's come on board. Like, we identified, I think there's 25 podcasts, something along those lines, episodes that are great for her to listen to that gives her a little bit more of that context around the work that we do for ODs. So yeah, podcasting, even the general public facing content that you're creating anecdotally has served very, very well in team training and onboarding. Mm-hmm. To your point, play the long game. I don't think that we need to emphasize this even more than what we already have, but as with any type of content, this is showing downloads per month from the time that I first started hitting record on the podcast. Obviously, I took this screenshot at the beginning of the month, which is why we see that drop off there on the last one. But again, in content creation, consistency compounds. So there's, be remiss in a limitless if I didn't throw some alliteration in there, right?
Yes. Well, and the thing I want to call out, look at that graph from start until like first quarter of 2019. Adam may have felt like he was failing during that time, right? Like, it's not getting traction. You know, people aren't downloading this. I'm not seeing my numbers go up. Do I really want to stick with this? And if you had done that, you would have missed out, you know, 12,000 downloads a month. A couple of years later, it takes time.
I told my producer I did not want to see the number of downloads for the first 6 months. That was something that I specifically told Kyle. It's like, you can look at them all you want. I don't care. I do not want to see the number of downloads for the first 6 months. And I didn't, because I didn't care. It was something that I was just going to lean into. I wish I don't know what my mindset was at that time, but I just knew it was going to work. There was no reason for it to not work. There's never been something that I've been more excited to do from a marketing activity. I loved it and I didn't care whether it was successful. So I told Kyle, and even if he would have showed me, I'd like to say that right now, as I say this, that it wouldn't have influenced me. I don't think that it would have. I knew it was going to work. And it has. how we do this, right? This is, again, the whole idea of reducing friction. So many advisors will say, well, what's the equipment that I need? What type of platform do I need? This was absolutely, for me, a who, not how, which is why Kyle was the first person, or it started with, after I had a conversation with Justin Caselli, and who's a, you may or may not know Justin, he's local, him and I have become good friends, and he had a podcast before that, so I had a conversation with him, and I watched Pat Flynn's YouTube series on how to launch a podcast, and all I learned is that I don't know anything about this, and I don't want to learn anything about this, because I know myself well enough that I'll get into that paralysis by analysis, and I just didn't want to spend that time editing. That sounded like nails on a chalkboard for me. So my first step was, who do I bring into the fold to help with the things that are not going to be my best and highest use of time? And then as far as what I recommend advisors do to start out is just get out your phone and hit record for the first 3 or 4 episodes to see if you even like it. Because, you know, Adam, like you had said, well, everybody says you got to do a podcast. Go ahead. Do you want to do a podcast? That's the question that you have to ask and answer. And if you do, try it, hit record on a couple of episodes. It's okay. Just start off with monologues as you're lining up guests. Mine is a 75% of the episodes are having a guest, and then the other are monologues. That's skewing more towards guests lately. It's actually been a while. I shouldn't say it. It's still about that 75% to 80% are guests. I think I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this, Jared. The one friction point with podcasting is, or the one challenge with podcasting is, there is a lot of friction to convert a listener to the next best step in your call to action, because podcasting is a very secondary activity. We're doing it when we're driving. We're doing it when we're mowing the lawn. We're doing it when we're running or biking or whatever that is. So we're not sitting there on the couch watching YouTube, or we're not opening our phone and reading an email newsletter, on our computer reading an email newsletter, where if there is a call to action buried in that, it's easy for me to do it right there. Podcasting, unlike other most mediums, there is a higher friction to convert a listener into whatever it is that you want their next best step to be. Mm-hmm. The way I solve that, am trying to solve that, and is to make it as easy as possible to know where they can find more information, which is why in the introduction of every single episode, I tell them where they can go to get more information. I plug our website. Mm-hmm. I am unapologetic about where they can go to learn more about what we do, what our firm is, and that the show is part of the firm, or that I'm not a professional podcaster. I do have a day job, and I'm unapologetic about that.
Yep.
I haven't listened to Rogers in a long time. Taylor, Ben is kind of in the middle. Taylor, for the longest time, was on the other camp. He's like, I don't want to promote. I don't want to, like, if they're interested, they'll do their research and find me. I was on the other end. I wanted to be unapologetic about where they could take the next best step.
Yeah.
What have you found in yours, or what approach have you taken with yours?
So I typically do 3 calls to action in every podcast, which doesn't sound like a lot until you consider all of mine happen between 10 and 15 minutes. So it's a very short time period. I'm very clear about, this is a companion piece, which goes with a long form content, which has more depth and detail to it than I'm going to cover in the podcast. So I've chosen to make that part of my style as a monologue to say, hey, I'm giving you the basics here. I'm giving you an overview. If you want to dive into this deeper, go to entrepreneurline.com. So it's in our pre-recorded intro, which is also our, you know, compliance disclosure that goes in at the front that says, hey, we're employees of Entrepreneur Aligned. You can find all of our disclosure information and more information at entrepreneuraligned.com. I make sure I insert one in the middle that says, hey, and there's a table in the long form piece, or there's a breakdown of this, or there's a link to the section in the tax code. Go to entrepreneuraligned.com. Look at our blog. It's in there. And then at the end, there's always the offer. Hey, if this is helpful and you would like to discuss it further, we're certainly happy to connect with you. You know, reach out to us at entrepreneurline.com. So I'm hitting it multiple times just to make sure that it's in their brain that there's more there. you know, making it easy, we are still doing monologue because this is a secondary tactic for us at this point. The long form copy is our primary. And so that's what we're really trying to drive to. But when we looked at that, you know, that curve for where Adam is, we're at episode 87, I believe. So we haven't even hit 100. How many are you at?
254.
Yeah.
I think.
And is your product better today than it was at episode 50?
I was great from number one.
Of course. Of course you are. So humble about it. our product.
Hopefully that was implied. Obviously you're sharpening the saw every
totally.
Episode.
And I don't want to send it to my mom and say, this is the greatest thing I've ever produced. And you got to take a look. I'm like, it works. It's good for right now. It's valuable content. It's not where I want it to be. We don't have top quality guests. We're not stretching the format out to 20 to 25 minutes. We're not gaining access to other people's lists to cross promote. We're not doing any of those things yet because I'm trying to make it easy. This is what we have bandwidth for right now. And I want to be consistent on we show up in Spotify, in Apple Podcasts. We're there for you every week. If you're a listener, listen, please get used to listening to us. We're going to make it better over time. So yes, reduce the friction, put in CTAs, be honest about what you're promoting.
In the beginning, you can always, it is more advantageous to start with fewer amounts of content and then ramp up. It's more detrimental if you start with a lot and then take it away without building up that trust equity with your audience. So I started out doing one episode or doing an episode. I think it was like the first and third Monday of the month. And then it took me like three times to realize that I have just so much more content that I want to get out there that we went to an every week episode starting in January of 2019. If I'd have started to say, hey, I'm going to do three episodes a week, and then that just became overwhelming and I take that down, you're not holding true to your promise to your listener. Right? How many of us know when Seinfeld was on growing up? Mm-hmm. Thursday nights, right? 7:30, I think it was, right? Central time. When was Friends on, right? We knew we had consistency in when that was going to be coming, when that's scheduled. Our episode is every single Monday morning by 6 a.m. I think it is now. It's in your player. As you build that trust equity, if I wanted to take it down right now, I probably could. Taylor's experimenting with that right now with his Advisor Success Marketing podcast. If any of you have followed that, he used to be really, really consistent with that, but he's built a lot of credibility in the advisor space. And because of that, he's now able to essentially release on demand or as he sees fit content, and people will consume it because they know him, they like him, they trust him. It's the Dan Carlin approach with the American history, mm-hmm. hardcore history. Thank yep. you. See, but he might release one or two episodes a year, if that. But
they're worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. They're 6 hours long.
Yeah.
Some of them. No, yeah. Yeah. Minimum three.
They used to be like 90 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Adam, question.
I got a couple questions. I think you started to touch on it, but thoughts on, we were doing weekly podcasts for a while and it got kind of exhausting, to be honest. And so we switched to every other week.
Okay.
And then every week we're not doing a podcast. We're setting up what we call a Coach's Corner article. Do you think that it really should be doing it weekly?
No.
Do
what works. Your audience will come to expect it. The software is smart enough to show up. If they consistently listen to your show, it will show up in their feed. It will show up in their updated or new activity. Apple Podcasts. I primarily listen on Apple. I can't speak to the user experience on Spotify, Stitcher, the other platforms. We're on all of them, but I can't speak from the user standpoint what that looks like. I'll go back to that. In content creation, consistency is key. So if you find that works for you, I would rather you produce consistently every two weeks mm-hmm. than to be burnt out doing it every week. I don't think that you're going to find.
Yeah. And there's an opportunity there to promo the written content as well that says, right. Hey, we only put these out every 2 weeks. If you want to get our other piece, you need to hop on our email list. It comes out. So you have content from us every week.
Yeah. Okay. That's good. I took a note down from something you mentioned earlier about cross-linking
yep.
material. The other question I have is I've been using Kyle Landry now for a year.
Yeah.
He's awesome.
Yes, he is.
The only thing I'm wondering is, should I be doing more with him than I am now? Like when I record the podcast and then I send him everything. Mm-hmm. He pretty much does all the podcast notes. He kind of cuts the video up, you know, and if I cough my brains out, he cuts it out. If we literally tell him, hey, you know, so-and-so dropped an F-bomb, take that out. I'll literally say on the podcast,
yeah, he listens to the entire episode. So right. Yeah, he knows.
Is there something else I should be doing? Like, for instance, does he add subscribe buttons? Does he, I don't know, does he add links visually onto the YouTube pages? Is there anything he's doing for you that
no.
I should be asking him? No.
And to be fair to Kyle, I've never asked him. His lane, he's an audiophile. Like, the dude is just all plugged in on the audio side of things, about editing, maximizing the quality of the audio. He's like, dude, you got to get a new filter for your mic. I've got the Shure SMB7 or SM7B, whatever it is. And he's like, you got to get a new filter. Your P's and your T's are still popping too much. So that's his lane. The only other thing that he does is he manages our Instagram channel, which the only reason that he does that is because he makes these audiograms. So he'll create like an audio clip that just has a static image. Yeah. If you look at 2020 Money Show on Instagram, all of that, I don't even know how to log into our Instagram account like that. that's Kyle. Anything that's on 2020 Money, I think it's 2020 Money Show or 2020 Money Pod. You can look at it, but that's the only other thing that he's doing that doesn't sound like he's doing for you. To be fair to Kyle, I think that would be dancing on the line of where his time is best spent. Anything more than that, creating. Now, what we have talked about is, and this is why we switch. I know we're getting a little technical here, and we'll make sure that we get through this. But we switch recording platforms from. I have been using Zoom for the longest time, and sending the Zoom link. It was just a standard link to all of our guests. We sent that through Acuity. That was how we did the scheduling. The audio quality of Zoom is subpar when you compare it to something like Zencastr, or now we're using Riverside FM. So Riverside is a platform that we're doing because it allows you to, if you want, to eventually simulcast to YouTube, and every conversation that I have, as I'm having every question that I ask, I hit M on my keyboard, which creates a mark in the audio file. So eventually what could happen is he can take that and every M, just split that and upload that as a separate YouTube show, as a separate YouTube clip. Mm-hmm. So every question that I ask a guest before I get ready to ask that question, if it's a pre-formatted question, right? Because my script is, I come into every conversation interview with 4, maybe 5 topics that I want to touch on. That's the skeleton. That's the highway that I want to be on. The guest may take a left turn here. I may take a left turn based off their answer to the question, but here are the 4 or 5 bullet points that I want to get through in every interview. So I know that when I ask those questions, I hit M right before I ask a question. It creates the mark in the clip. And eventually we could strip that off and create a separate YouTube video. Well, that's where Riverside plays in.
And you can split those out into Instagram reels, yeah, if that's relevant to your audience. There's no limit to what you could choose to do. Even Spotify now has video that's embedded in there for podcasts. Yeah. And I think that just launched here in the last month or so. So the ability to repurpose content and break it apart and put it on different platforms is there. I think we want to continue to hit, like, reduce the friction, because consistency matters over anything else that you're going to do. If you can do something of value for your audience and do it over and over and over again, that's going to win out of doing the best strategy, but bailing on it because it's eating 60 hours a week of your time and you can't actually see clients. Melissa's got a question too.
Oh, sorry, Melissa. hold that question real quick.
So staying on the technical side of things, the podcast is recorded. Is there a 2020 Money website? Is that where you find the podcast, or just on the platforms?
Just on the platforms.
Okay.
For now. So,
And then you share Apple's, or which version do you choose to share? Or is like a Buzzsprout or something?
So we used a plugin. I think it's called TuneIn, which is like a WordPress plugin for the website that you'd have to ask Greg about how they did that.
That makes sense. And
on that platform, with that plugin on the website, if or when someone that isn't listening to the show finds the show because of the website, on that website, they can select which platform they want to listen.
Perfect.
That's also why, kind of going back to this, the left or the right side, that is a Linktree page. So Linktree, like, or just Google Linktree. And that's whether it's Linktree or Card, C-A-A-R-D. I can't remember if it's C-A-A-R-D or C-A-R-R-D. It's one of those two, is essentially like easy to build website. And so all this is the QR code that I have on the back of my podcast card. So I don't give business cards anymore. I give podcast cards. So it's one QR code on the back of the card that someone can open up their phone, scan it. It brings them to this Linktree. And now they can select, yeah, I listen to podcasts on Apple or Google or Spotify, et cetera. They can go to the website. They can learn more about the membership. That's the one place that I want them to go, where now they can choose how they want to consume the content from that place. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Okay. Pass right there.
So I kind of realized actually earlier today that my mindset on the podcast that we're going to start hopefully in November is, if you build it, they will come. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there's some level of truth to that, but that's probably not all that it would take to grow the podcast. So I'm curious what, you know, three things maybe you've learned that would increase viewership, I guess, like in the early stages, like what you would have done if you could go back to increase the viewership early on. And one thing that I'm thinking about doing specifically is, we've just built up a long list of emails for, I think, Adam, what you would call those not right now clients, mm-hmm. or just not interested clients. So we're going to drip on them with that, of course, and then clients as well. Hopefully they're listening and referring. I mean, those are just two things that I have. I don't know if there's anything else you'd add to that.
One thing that is for the retirement planning.
It's for the retirement planning market. That's what we're in.
Okay. I admittedly did not do a whole lot of research into how to grow the podcast. I did zero marketing, zero promotion with the podcast. It was 100% organic growth. Just putting it out there and people searching for, I'm probably showing that I didn't do as much due diligence as I should have. I don't even know what they were searching for. They just started finding it. Searching for optometry. I think that's maybe the benefit of a niche podcast. But there is research out there about the importance of titling. Well, one thing that Josh, a friend of mine that I had dinner with last night, he said that the podcast players, the description of your podcast is going to matter much, much more going forward. These mm-hmm. players are getting smarter around the keywords that you're putting into, like, your description is turning more and more into an SEO type strategy to build on the organic growth of the podcast simply by what people search in their respective podcast player.
Well, and I'll give you an example. So I opened another business this year. It's a micro gym. So we're going to serve 150 members, all of that stuff. The very first search that I did coming in as an industry outsider was for mentorship for that specific business. And I did that first search through a podcasting search engine rather than through Google. So people who are looking to learn and they're looking for depth are going to be searching. So when you're thinking about titling your podcast, building the SEO around that to support that, really approaching it from the perspective of who do we want as our listeners and what problem are they looking to solve, or what knowledge are they trying to gain, or what community are they seeking to find, and make your podcast built to service that search. That would be my best advice for starting from scratch.
One example that we did with that, just in trying to be better about that early on without doing a very targeted, hey, we're going to do Facebook ads or LinkedIn ads or anything like that, is Facebook groups. So there's two optometry Facebook groups that I'm a part of. And I would just look at the posts and the questions that people were asking in the Facebook group. And that formulated a lot of podcast topics. Like, people are asking this question in a Facebook group. They probably enjoy learning. I mean, it gives you that topic, and their question is essentially giving you a variation of the title of what that podcast can be, or mm-hmm. title and or part of that description. It's kind of that red car syndrome. Like, you really don't pay attention to red cars until you buy a red car, and then all you see are red cars. The same thing happened for me with podcasting. Like, all of this stuff never really manifested in my mind until I hit record, and now I have a podcast. So everything I did was seen through, all right, how is this going to apply to the podcast? Mm-hmm. How can I take this through the filter of running and hosting a podcast?
So I've got a bit of kind of feedback on that, because you know, I work with Proudmouth, which is really expensive.
Yes, they are.
But I knew I couldn't do it by myself, right? I needed training wheels and all the rest. So Proudmouth's answer to that they're on me about is guess, right? And get the right guess. So, you know, in Adam's case, you know, guests within the optometry business that themselves have a big following, right? And but you can start small, right? And you know, again, my first guest was an insurance gal that, you know, who I don't do insurance, but this is a woman I work with. I had her on, she's got a big following. So that to me is how you
If you look at the history in 2020 money, if you go back and look at the first 25 episodes, the vast majority of them are guests. I think the one that I did, like I think I did one called like Undressing Financial Services, where I just kind of, here's how the different advisory models work and whatever. And that podcast still gets downloaded, even though it was released in 2018. And when people listen to it right now, they're saying, "You're welcome to a dose of financial sense." And it's like, so it's not even rebranded with the 2020 money. But to your point, yeah, guests do matter. We send our best practice. So when the podcast goes live every Monday morning, one of Kathy's first things that she does every Monday morning is we have a pre-filled text expander template that she will populate and send out to the guest with the link to the podcast and any other collateral that was relevant to that. Like the Instagram feed that Kyle put together. And she will send that to the guest, basically saying, "Hey, here you go. Use as you see fit. Appreciate you being on the show," et cetera, et cetera. The part that I always screen for with guests is to ensure that they know that this is not an advertorial. I'm happy to have you on the show, and I'm happy to have you talk about your product or your platform, but it's not going to be done through the filter of, like, "Hey, here I am, buy my stuff." Like, I had one podcast that I recorded early on with a commercial real estate agent, and I never released it. I told him there was a problem with the audio. Yeah, because it was terrible. Like, it was painful as a host, just how much self-promotion was happening. There was almost zero education. It was just, "Here I am, use me." It's like, God.
When we launched our podcast, Tiffany and I hosted it together, and we had guests for 3 quarters. Which just made it too heavy of a lift. But yeah, we had two. One was an insurance guy, sorry. And one was somebody else who just, the episode just didn't work. And in both cases, we didn't release the episode. And we just told them, "Hey, this doesn't work. If you want to re-record it with these boundaries, we can try it again." And both of them declined. And that was a really good, like, we picked the wrong guest. So I do want to point everybody back to, like, this on-purpose planner. As we're talking about tactics and, you know, what should I name my podcast? Who's going to produce it? How often do I do it? Going back to, what's your desired outcome of the podcast? Are you trying to create content to connect better with your clients? Are you trying to give shareable content so that you can generate more client referrals? Are you trying to market to your COIs? Are you trying to generate new leads? Are you generating brand awareness? Whatever those answers are and whatever your objectives are should dictate your podcast strategy, not the other way around. So being clear from the start is going to help and make sure that you're targeting the right stuff.
And find other people that you can benchmark off of. I mean, my mentors, if you will, or my the handful of podcasts that I looked at when I was launching, Kitsis. I mean, my introduction, the format of the podcast is very similar to Kitsis. I have the basic intro, or like I have the lead in music, the bumper music. Welcome to 2020 Money. It's my wife that did the voiceover for that. And then my introduction is a carbon copy of what Kitsis did. The variation of the topics that I did, I benchmarked off of what Reese Harper was doing at Dentist Advisors. And what Jim Dolly had started to do with White Coat Investor podcast. So trying to think if there were others that I was the money guy, Brian Preston and Bo, and they're quote unquote OGs in the podcasting space. They've been doing that podcast, The Money Guy. Brian started The Money Guy show in 2004-ish, something like that. And it's an entire, I mean, they have a production team of 20 people right now that just run their media company, and they're in Franklin, Tennessee. So, like, you don't have to aspire to that. But my point is, find other podcasts that you enjoy just to help give you some of that format and structure, topic ideas, how they're writing their description. I didn't create this out of a blank canvas. I use them as a paint by numbers. So question. And then Allison, do we have any virtual questions? Okay. Okay. Virtual folks, I know we see you. So if you have questions, we certainly want to make sure that that we involve you as well. So go ahead.
So just thinking about getting into podcasts is scary. And I'm thinking of the time commitment to produce them. Mm-hmm. Are you producing one every week, or are you doing them like you're doing, filming up three podcasts?
I surge podcasts. I only record the podcast 7 times a year.
Okay.
So we surge client meetings. We surge, like, it's time blocking. It's Cal Newport, Deep Work, that whole book and premise of compartmentalizing and doing our focus work, doing our best work in batch work. I block a week to do episodes.
So my next silly question is, are you changing up the outfit so it looks like you're doing it weekly?
Yes.
Okay.
And which isn't as relevant now, or it up until the last 6 to 9 months or so. I can't remember when exactly we switched to Riverside. Prior to that, it didn't matter because it was all audio. So we weren't using any video, but now as we start doing that, I have, I think, 4 different shirts in the office that, yeah, I'll change shirts. So,
and I tend to produce.
You called me out on that, but yeah, that's exactly what we do. It sounds weird, but not called me out, but that you pointed that out because it's.
Our videos are done 3.
Yeah.
I do have the same outfit.
Yeah.
They're not designed to be like a weekly thing.
Yeah. That's one of the, when we do our strategic planning as a firm, that is one of the big non-negotiable rocks. When I look at my schedule after I block my out of office free time and, you know, limitless stuff and things like that, like one of the big rocks is, all right, when is Adam going to be doing his interviews? How many interviews do I have to do that week? When will that get me through? When do I need to do it again? So I think it's, if I look at my wall calendar, that one that we talk about all the time and how important that is in purple. I don't know why podcasting is purple for me, but I've got my weeks blocked out. And
so the P,
so maybe it starts with P. Yeah. It's alliteration, right? Couldn't do limitless without alliteration. But yeah, cool. It's blocked out. It would be, having said that, I didn't always do that. I've had more just-in-time podcast recordings than I care to admit from our closet. I've done one in the basement. Yeah. The closet, side note from that, all the clothes around you does act as a very good sound dampener. But not fun doing that on a Sunday night when Kyle's texting me, dude, what are we doing for tomorrow?
And again, I think it also depends on, you know, what your format is. So I tend to produce weekly. It's on Fridays. I block out 3 hours. That usually gives me enough time to write, record the podcast, and record the video. But like this week, we're here at Limitless, so I'm going to have to double up next week. And I tend to batch a little bit, but because I'm doing monologue and I don't have guests, I can control my time. If I had guests, I would definitely go with, we're going to do 3 days and we're going to do 8 episodes in 3 days. Yep. And schedule them out and block them out. So you could be a little more flexible based on your format, I think.
And one more point on that, just from a scheduling standpoint, like if I'm going to be podcasting for that week, then 4 weeks prior to that is schedule guests. Like that is a task on my Kathy, soon to be EA's schedule. Is like, can't show up to podcast week. It's like, all right, who am I going to record with? Like you've got to build that into the schedule as well from a logistical standpoint of making sure 4 to 6, if not further out than that, you're scheduling. And we'll have guests that will schedule and, or they'll say, oh, they'll have to reschedule. It's like, all right, here's the link. And next available time isn't until September. Yeah, we batch record the podcast. I've got enough content for the next 9 weeks, so we'll record that then. Last point on scheduling is there's always something that might come up that might preface the need for a just-in-time or a very timely, relevant podcast, like student loans, right? When we finally got clarity on the Biden administration and what, you know, the new SAVE plan, replacing repay, IDR, the IDR contingent, like all of that stuff. When we got clarity on that, I technically didn't need new content for, I think, 8 weeks, but I contacted Student Loan Planner, had a conversation. We plugged that episode in because it was very, very timely. So give yourself permission to be flexible if the situation calls for it. Mm-hmm. Allison.
Just a point of clarification. Julie is wondering, Jared, is your podcast just you now, or is it still you and Tiffany sometimes?
Just me now. So we did, I think, 50 episodes with the two of us hosting and having guests, and decided that logistically it was too much. So we actually paused the podcast for about 12 months and then relaunched it as a monologue podcast. So you can look at the publication date on the episodes and see that there's a gap. But when you look at our history, still just seeing 87 episodes in there. So you don't lose them. And they're mostly evergreen topics. So it wasn't like we had to get rid of them. We just changed.
Right. Hey, Adam, and then we'll go to Josh.
What specifically with recording it seven times a year? I've been doing it. I've been picking a day to record, and that's it. And then once I'm full, going out 2 or 3 months and then doing it again. You're saying you're taking a whole week?
Well, when I say a whole week, it's usually like 2.5 days, because okay. I don't do it on Monday and I don't work on Fridays. So I have Tuesday, Wednesday, and then there's team meetings or stuff that comes in there. So during those times, for every hour of podcast recording, it's typically about it's 2 hours of my time. So after I get done hitting record, like, I'm not doing more than 3 interviews a day, because I want to record the introduction right after I get done recording, ping Kyle, adjust that in Asana, right? Some of that logistics that I still am involved in pre and post until I can ship it off to him. So that's why during a week, it's usually 2.5-ish days.
So a week would be, say, 7 or 8, maybe at most, episodes.
Yes.
And then 9 weeks later, another week that looks like that.
Yep.
Is that about right?
Yep. And let me take the next question. I think I have a copy of my calendar from 2023. That I can show the number of episodes, because I'm kind of curious what I blocked out and what I allocated.
So, question for just podcasting and videos too, Jared. Did either of you ever hire a voice coach or somebody to, like, hey, you look like a gremlin on your YouTube video, you got to change it?
Because I get a haircut.
No, I have a melodious voice. I didn't need a voice. No, I never did. I think there's a real, unless you're producing at the level of like a Tim Ferriss, right? Or somebody where this is their primary occupation, that they're producing content, you could probably do that. If you feel like it's a weakness and you're really conscious about it, you could. Podcasting and video is a very human activity.
Yeah.
They want to hear from other humans who are real people. So I don't edit out little ums and ahs or pauses. I will leave in things like, oh, I didn't like how I explained that. Allow me to say it this way, which I think is better said, right? I like to leave that stuff in because it doesn't feel synthetic. It feels authentic. And so I think if you're worried about it, you could certainly do that. I didn't do it. I don't know anybody who has.
I don't either.
So I don't think it's necessary.
And you bring up Tim Ferriss. Tim Ferriss still records his podcast with the Audio-Technica ATR-5100 or whatever that most common microphone that you could buy on Amazon for, at the time, like $60. I mean, I've seen him live stream his podcast recording, and I've seen an episode where he has his mic on a stand propped up on a bunch of books.
Do the Ron Burgundy voice more
often. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
That's why I kept hearing that.
I mean, I was a phlebotomist in undergrad, and I would have people, when I was hooking them up for plasma donation, they'd add, you know, the small talk, and say, I'm a junior at University of Wisconsin Green Bay. Oh, you're going into broadcasting? Like, no, why? It's like, oh, you have a radio voice. I just thought you'd be in journalism or broadcasting communications.
And they said you had a face for radio.
There's always one.
Always one. And he's got a microphone.
He's got a mic.
I also don't ever listen to my own podcasts.
Really?
I don't watch the videos.
Really?
I don't like it. Nope.
See, I strongly recommend that, because I pick up things that I want to improve. So I try and be my own worst critic. I don't listen to every podcast, but I'll listen to, out of every 4 that get released, I'll listen to at least one of them. Yeah, I love, I shouldn't say I love listening to my own podcast. I'm not that narcissistic. I love listening to it because I want to be a better version of it. I want to pick up on things that I'm doing wrong. One thing that I did realize that I was picking up is, I would say, let's take a right turn here. I picked up, like, I was using the same thing, the same there was another one that I observed that I found myself saying over and over again. And now I can't remember what it is, which is good, I guess, because maybe I'm not using it as much, but I pick up on those things that I never would have picked up on had I not listened to myself. Because you don't think of that in the moment when you're recording.
Mm-hmm.
Good point. I apologize for my earlier comment. I feel bad.
Time. You're fine.
I'd like your thoughts on potential guests being centers of influence.
Yeah.
And the idea that gets me access to their network.
100%.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean,
just to make sure it wasn't
before I had the credibility in the optometry space, again, go back and look at the history of the first 25 to 30 episodes of 2020 Money. I had still a friend to this day, Kevin Slattery, who's a CPA in Indianapolis, zero affiliation with the optometry space. I mean, he had a couple of, but it's not like he was someone that I was intentionally bringing on to develop that COI relationship with optometry. We recorded two or three episodes, one on cash balance plans and things. Like, yeah, absolutely. If anything, it's a worst case scenario, it's filler practice for you. Best case scenario, it's a way to develop a relationship with them. You demonstrate credibility with them. They have an opportunity to share that episode with their network to demonstrate their credibility and knowledge, because you're asking them questions. They're the ones demonstrating the expertise.
Right.
It is an absolute win-win situation.
Well, and Tiffany will talk about this with some of the COI pieces as well, but think it through about how you make their life easier to promote the content that you're making. So Adam, I would love to hear, you know, what you guys have as far as a process, but okay, we're going to release the episode on this day. Here's a social post that you could send out to promo it, or here's the link that you can include and some copy for your newsletter. So you're not relying on them to have to take extra time out of their schedule to promote content inside their network. You can just package that stuff up and say, here's exactly what it can look like. I think as you get further down the road, and it can almost be a little more exclusive to have someone on your podcast. Hey, we would love to do an episode together. Here's the requirements for that. We're going to need you to promote it to your list at least twice. We're going to need you to use this copy. We're going to need you to tag us in social on this proximity to the post of the episode. You can write all that stuff out in a process, and you can hand that to staff as well and say, here's what it takes every time we do a guested podcast. You can make that part of your interview process for guests to get on the podcast. Clearly, we're not there. I want to get us back to that point where we're just regimented about how we promote every time we do something.
So it's interesting that you bring that up, because that came up at dinner last night with Josh. And it's something that we have not done, as we send it out to them. But to your point about making it easier, it's not something that we've done. We just say, here's the information. Go ahead. You know, use as you see fit is essentially what we say. But as Josh and I were talking last night, chat has revolutionized that, because now Kathy can make it part of her. We can have a text expander prompt that she can now type into chat and say, generate 4 LinkedIn posts with insert guest name promoting the 2020 Money podcast, where they talk about insert topic, enter. Here's the chat GPT. Here are the 4 social posts. Copy, paste in the email, send off to, you know, to your point. Here are 4 suggestive LinkedIn posts that you can plug to your network, right? In utilizing chat to do that heavy lifting. Mm-hmm. Chat and text expander, right? So why would Kathy write the same prompt over and over and over again into chat when you can use a text expander to do 95% of that? And then she just writes in the guest name, the topic, a few other points. So that came up last night at dinner. It's funny that you bring that up. I had one more thing that I was, to your point about like the conditions that you set as you grow into that space. One thing that I will say, if I get asked to be a guest on a podcast, I will do a guest spot on any podcast as long as A, it's applicable to the audience that I'm looking to speak to, which is either advisors or optometrists. And in either one of those, A, they have to be a guest on 2020 Money, and B, they have to agree to share audio back and forth. So my episode is going to be essentially me recording an intro. On this episode of 2020 Money, you're going to hear my conversation with Adam Jones on the XYZ Optometry podcast. Boom, I'm done. You know, you might call me lazy. I call it efficient. That's one more week I don't have to record a podcast. Yep. It was a twofer. And then they do the same thing. I record 2020 Money. I send them the audio. It's like, hey, here you go. Plug this as an episode on your podcast. Here's your guest appearance on the 2020 Money Show, or 2020 Money. So create those rules, and you could set that from the very beginning. You don't have that you don't have to have that credibility. That was something that I didn't start to do until later, until it kind of smacked me in the face. Like, why aren't I utilizing that audio?
I think it's that constant process of seeing all the things undone and having them drive you nuts.
Adam.
Yeah, just in response to that, I think there's a limitless recording on podcasting where it, like, one of the guys is talking about it being a tool for meeting COIs and people. And I think he's written a book on the importance of podcasting to make connections. So yeah, absolutely. Apropos of the voice, so the kind of poster child in Proudmouth is this, it's called Retirement Reveal, the Jeremy somebody. And as he says, like, he has a voice not for radio. He has a terrible, annoying voice, but he's like the most successful guy because the guy is just so organized and driven and on it, right? So you don't need a great voice. You just need to be a hustler and organized. So my question is, to me, like, if I was here and I wasn't already doing it, I just wouldn't know where to start. And that's why I started with Proudmouth. It's like the easiest way to start, right? They just do it, everything for you. All you really got to do is show up. But I'm kind of curious about the other levels. And I'm kind of curious with Jared exactly. You know, I kind of semi-know about Adam, and Adam won't give away his contacts for his producer or whatever.
He's not taking any more people,
yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. But I would like, I'm sitting here now, I still want to know, but if I was sitting here with nothing, I wouldn't know, Adam, who do I call?
Steve Stewart would be the next producer because he does have it. And Kyle, to be fair to Kyle, I know he's got a few things in the works right now where he's trying to hire more editors because the biggest time consuming aside from his is he listens to the episodes. So to cut them. So there's time involved in that.
Right. So I want to know how Jared does it. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to just tell you one thing that I get with Proudmouth, other than I get a co-host with it, but they do all the social media. They do a ton, they make a ton of social media posts, right? To go up on social media. So who does that stuff for you? And so Jared, who edits it, who posts it, right, to the different platforms and does whatever else they do. All I do.
How many posts do they do for you before
Jared? Oh, like 2 weeks worth of posts, a post for every day for 2 weeks.
Every day?
Every day.
Okay.
Yeah, so 14. Okay. Maybe more. Maybe it's 3 weeks. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't post them. I have a gal who uploads it all.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So I think if you're starting from scratch, get a decent microphone. You don't need anything super fancy. We originally got like a whole mixing board and the Rode Pod mics because we had four of them and we were doing two of us and up to two guests internally. We had two cameras to film from different angles so we could put it on YouTube. It was too much friction and it was overkill. So I now just have the Rode Pod mic plugs directly into USB. I'm recording inside QuickTime. I take the QuickTime file, I send it directly to our executive assistant. She does one run through and kind of clips the beginning and the end. That goes off to our production company, which is Paz Click, P-A-Z Click. There are lots and lots of production companies that can help you with this. They clean it up a bit more. It goes into Libsyn, I believe, and then gets put in the posting calendar to go out on Apple, Spotify, everything else. We had an intro that was recorded. So the intro is default. It gets appended to every file. And then the production company writes up notes on the episode. Hey, today Jared talks about dot, 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 dot. It's pretty minimal. It's intended to integrate with search. So if someone's searching for that topic, they're going to stumble across our episode. And then it's posted. And then we go back internal and our internal person is doing promotion on social. So she's writing posts for LinkedIn, Twitter/X, and Instagram and putting that out. So it's pretty simple. My job is to write the topic, record the episode, put it in the SharePoint folder, and my hands are off of it. So if you're running without an internal team, you can take most of that and push it to a production company, and they're going to be able to run all that stuff that we're doing as a blend of internal and external right now.
To your point, you don't need a mixing board. You don't need all that sexy equipment. I want to get the model right. I use the Shure MV7, Mike Victor 7. That's the mic. The nice thing I like about that is it has the XLR plugin, those three prong big microphone plugins. And it also has just the USB, a USB plugin. So plugs in the back of the microphone, USB cord into the MacBook, recognizes it instantaneously, hit record on Riverside. It's right there. Kyle has editorial access to Riverside. So unlike before, where if I was recording with Zoom, I'd have to record to my computer, then download the files, then upload them into ShareFile, then share the link with Kyle. Like everything now is in Riverside. So he has access to those audio tracks right there. We manage the entire content calendar in Asana. So we have four different sections in Asana. I have my parking lot of ideas. Like I have probably 2 years worth of content ideas that there's like 4 or 5 years in, and I still have, you know, you'll never run out of ideas, promise you. So I have the parking lot of ideas in production / scheduled. So when I have a guest lined up, I'll drag it into this top section. Then I have a completed queue, which now once that's done recorded, Kyle knows that he can go and edit. When he's done with the completed queue, he drags it up into the distribution queue. That's when Dave and Chase at the team, at Greg's team, know that the podcast is available. They can grab the show notes, do the blog post, get that ready to launch so that we have kind of a concerted approach. So when the podcast is live, the blog post is there, the transcription is there, keywords are updated. So that's how we manage the logistics from a team standpoint. To your point about like from an editorial standpoint or from a social media standpoint, Kyle will use, he has access to my LinkedIn and he uses our account with Taplio. So that's the content manager that we use with LinkedIn. And then Instagram, I don't do anything on Twitter with the podcast because ODs aren't on Twitter. It's weird. I don't know why, but they're all on Facebook. So Kyle will do the posts on Facebook and he'll also do the posts on the 2020 Money Instagram, and then he'll use Taplio to upload some posts. So Kyle does, again, I think if you were to ask him on a polygraph, he probably doesn't want to do all of that, or we're looking to maybe remove him from some of that. But until he tells me no, he'll continue to do it. To your point about Proudmouth, though, yeah, it's a significant investment from a time or from a cost standpoint.
Since we're talking about promoting on the slide that's on there right now, use the planner.
Yeah.
Figure out what you're trying to execute. You don't have to post to every social platform. You don't have to do video along with it. You don't have to do full transcription. You can start small with something that you can consistently execute as long as it's going to be pointed toward your audience and how you're trying to connect with them.
I mean, yeah, we got into a little bit ahead ourselves, but here's the visual of what we just narrated for you. I am a strong component. Like that pro tip that we have up there, it's like in edit with GarageBand, if you just want to try it, but please, I would with every fiber in me ask you to not edit your own episodes for multiple different reasons. Find someone. Steve Stewart runs, he edits. Again, my friend Josh, the OG Stacking Benjamins, he edits the Stacking Benjamins podcast. He's done, I don't know if he still does Ben and Taylor's show. I think he does. And he's got a team of producers and editors that he has built out where they have a niche, right? It's editing a podcast. You don't need it. It's not like there's any specialization in working with financial advisors. That's who they do a lot of their work with. So Steve Stewart has editing capacity. Kyle, I think, is possibly finding. Interestingly enough, the reason that Kyle told me don't introduce me to any other advisors is outside of Adam, and I think one other, every other advisor that I introduced Kyle to would have a conversation and then never followed through. Sorry if there's any of you in here that I introduced you and you never followed through, but he just got sick and tired of having intro calls and emails and trying to set people up, and then he'd never get an episode, or they'd do one or two and then they would never do it again. So that's why he didn't want any more referrals from me.
Can you break down some approximate costs for a few of those different services?
Some of the what? I'm sorry.
Approximate costs or investment?
I'd pay 10x what they charge. Like it's Libsyn is 40 a month.
Yeah, it's not expensive.
30 or 40 a month.
We've got some pricing there for hardware, like the Rode Pod mic is $200. I mean, if you wanted to do it all yourself, you really could be out the door for like a couple $100 mic and $40 a month for Libsyn. So anything that you add, it's about what kind of package do you want to build? So I think we pay PaaS somewhere around like $1,500 a month, but that includes a lot of things that are not podcast specific. And then we have comp costs internally for our team that we're spending to be able to do that. So I think if you're looking at like for our level of production, distribution, and social sharing and promotion, you know, $1,000 to $2,000 a month, you could probably get close to what we're doing if you were very specific to that.
And you got MS once a week.
Correct. Okay. Yep. Weekly, short episode.
And yes, I'm paying
$9.50 basically an episode, right? So I'm doing one a month. They really want me to do two a month, and not, you know, as I say, I as much as for their bottom line, just to build the momentum.
They want you to do 3 a week.
Yeah.
At $1,000 an episode.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy. Daily show, Adam.
Daily live show. Yeah. I think even pricier. Yeah. This is truly one of those things where you can make it as cheap or as expensive as you want. Somebody that do a quick Google. Does anybody follow Cody Sanchez with Contrarian Capital? She's kind of come on the scene in the last couple of years. And so they have just this whole suite of like courses and communities and private investment funds and everything that they do. She is a content powerhouse. And I would be curious to see what the size of her team is, because it's YouTube, it's Instagram, it's Facebook, it's Twitter, everything. She is just inundating with content. But I think they raised a $40 million fund and they filled it in like 3 days. And she didn't exist essentially 18 months ago. So I would imagine that her content bill is a couple $100,000 a year to be able to create and maintain this following and this network. Like, that's the top end of what you could do, all the way down to, let me get an episode a month out the door, and I can do that for about $40 a month.
Allison, yes.
Yes. Okay. From Ben online, Adam, do you have a process for making sure guests have a certain level of mic or internet connection so that their portion of the audio is quality?
Yes, it's all built into the confirmation page that they get with the Acuity scheduling link. So I let them know that they need to have a wire, or that they, AirPods work fine. They're not ideal, but they work just fine, wired or wireless. And that's where Riverside does a pretty good job in beefing up the audio. Yeah, that's all scripted. I might be able to pull that up and copy and paste that, so that we can share the content or the content from that email. But it's not much. I mean, I just tell them, don't be in a Starbucks, be on a good internet connection. And I do tell them that this will be on video, though we will not be releasing the video, because I get that question a lot when I get on, like, oh, are we doing video? Do I need to change? Like, no, you're on video with this right now, and it does record the video, but we're only releasing the audio. So we do try, and we have learned to manage and set expectations with them as well.
And your mechanism for video?
So. Mechanism for video. It used to be Zoom. Now Riverside, as a recording platform, does all of that as part of the, once you hit record, it automatically does the video.
Okay. From John, what's the difference between Libsyn, Zencastr, and Riverside FM?
So Libsyn stands for Liberated Syndication. So that is the home base. That's the platform that your audio gets uploaded to. And then essentially that's the mothership. And then from there, that's where Libsyn will send out that feed to the various different podcast platforms. I have no idea how that works. Kyle set all that up.
It's basically like AWS for podcast content. It's the server that's hosting it to a certain degree of quality to allow all the distribution apps to plug in and access that content.
Yeah. So that's the host, if you will. Zencastr and Riverside are the recording platforms that we use to just simply capture the audio. Mm-hmm. And then once Kyle or any producer that you're using, right, the you want to make sure that you are, and this is what Zencastr and Riverside do automatically. Zoom, if you're starting out with Zoom, you have to record. I think you still have to do this. Maybe Zoom has changed, but previously, if you were recording with Zoom live or recording to the cloud, it would only generate one audio track.
Yeah.
And you want to make sure that you have two separate audio tracks, one for you and one for, assuming you're having a guest, one for your guest.
And that's a manual setting that you would have to do to record locally to your hard drive and specify record each audio file individually.
As a separate track.
We did that. Now that I'm just doing monologue,
yeah,
I just
matter.
Do quick time because the quality is good enough and it's a single audio file because it's just me.
Yeah. But if you're having guests, you want to make sure that you have two separate audio tracks.
So what's the difference between Riverside and Zencastr?
Zencastr is, as I understand it, to be fair to Zencastr, I haven't looked at them in a long time. They are a recording platform.
So they're pretty much the same thing.
They're pretty much the same thing. Riverside has a little bit more horsepower, as I understand it, by being able to simulcast, do live streams to YouTube. You're automatically recording videos. You can hit, like I mentioned, those marker clips where if I just hit M, I can create a visual cue in the audio and video file for Kyle. So he can, technically, Kyle wouldn't even have to watch the whole thing. He'd just be like, all right, cut here, cut here, cut here, cut here. Great, here are my four clips, upload to YouTube, boom. Like, there's obviously more to it than that, but a few more bells and whistles with Riverside if you're looking to create multiple different pieces of content from one interview.
Yeah, I just wanted to give some context around Proudmouth and give a shout out to them because they have been awesome, right, with me. And one of the things I got was a co-host who's been so incredible and also been a coach, right, with the whole thing. And I didn't want to be just that. I love just giving monologues, but I don't know that everyone wants to listen to my monologue. I thought it would be better as a bit of a two-hander. And and I've got a lot of compliments around the co-host. So you get what you pay for.
Yeah. Question back? Sorry.
Okay.
Okay,
and then I have a virtual one.
Okay.
So we'd be in the space of starting, brand new. So this is all new to us, but we're also pretty terrible with content, blogging irregularly. We don't have an ebook yet. We don't have a lead magnet. We're doing other things well, but this content piece is something that we haven't, like drip campaigns, organizing lists, distribution lists, all that stuff is pretty new. So would you say that starting a podcast is premature to that? Would you suggest that the core would be to start getting consistent with written content, have some deliverables, like your toolkit, for example?
I had nothing. The toolkit came after the podcast.
Okay. I would always go back to what are you passionate about? Like, what platform speaks to you where you're like, this isn't a soul sucking activity that I hate scheduling, right?
Is your concern like, I don't have content? Like, I don't know what I'm going to talk about.
This is going to be top of the funnel. Where do they go next? Right. And I know that a lot of times with podcasts, it's not direct to sign up for an initial consult. It's they download an ebook first, or they do something middle of the road, middle of the funnel. Right. Like, we don't have any of that yet.
My CTA from day one was book a call. At that time, I called it a discovery call. I hadn't even branded the whole triage process until into it. So my CTA was first to do a phone call.
I think it's like the specificity and quality of your podcast. So Adams, he's targeting 33,000 people, and not even really, because a lot of them don't meet the
financial criteria. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So you're very specific on, I know them deeply. I know what they need. I have unique information that nobody else is talking about. So he's establishing and building expertise and trust everywhere along the way. When they hit one of those topics that Adam is the really only expert they know of, they're going to want to talk to him and book an intro call. The broader you are, you need some of that middle of the funnel stuff that says, hey, I'm building rapport, I'm building trust, I'm demonstrating some expertise, but I am one of many options. They're going to want to investigate further rather than just booking a call in most cases. Yeah. So that's where you can even just have like a white paper to download, or maybe the middle of the funnel is, hey, every month we do a webinar that covers the central topic for us. It can be other things that are a little less commitment requirement than schedule a time to meet with me. So it's going to depend on who your audience is and what you're talking to them about.
Thanks. But that's a good comment, because I think for a non-niche firm like ours, we're pseudo niche. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to establish the middle of the funnel. So that kind of confirmed my thoughts on that.
Yeah. And you don't need a million things, but just having like one or two that are middle of the funnel that convert really well for you, that might be enough there. Like, we talk about this thing.
Sign up for the drip campaign kind of thing. Like, that would be an example of middle of the funnel. Like, sign up for our weekly newsletter with tips and tricks on da 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 da.
Yeah. Yeah. Or even like, download our top 5 tips for this specific thing that we just talked about in the episode that you tend to talk about in every episode. You could have one funnel that all points to that.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Okay, let's go Matthew online and then Ryan.
What KPIs do you measure, or what do you track at all? Then a couple other follow-up questions.
I'm sorry, can you ask?
what KPIs do you track or what metrics do you track as it relates to podcasting?
So for us, because this is really like a validation tool that people who are going to find us through other methods are going to have the opportunity to listen to our podcast episodes. We're just looking at unique downloads per episode. And then because it's not a primary tool for us yet, we're just asking, hey, have you, you know, watched any of our videos or listened to our podcasts when we meet with somebody new? I think if it was, you know, more central to what we're doing, we would track stuff differently. We just want to see continued growth. Are we getting more subscribers and are we getting more downloads? For us, that meets the definition of success right now.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Similar to us. I mean, it's just downloads. And then we, how many triage calls are we getting? Which is why on the Acuity page, we ask, how did you find us? So we want to track, okay, what are the top three activities that are generating new triage calls?
And then, sorry, separate question. So then, Adam, did I hear you? So you record your podcast and then you create a blog that supports the podcast after. Did you say that?
Yeah. So it's a new thing. It's relatively new that the Will Now team is taking the transcription of the podcast and turning that into a long form, essentially taking the show, the show transcription and turning it into a quasi long form blog post.
Okay.
That they are cleaning up before the episode releases. So they want Monday's episode no later than end of day Wednesday, the week before. So that gives them time to clean it up, put it as a post, load it up, schedule it with a little bit more SEO friendly. Because one of the things that we're like, not every OD listens to the podcast. So we're trying to cross-pollinate and find people through organic search. And by building that brand credibility in written form and introduce them to the podcast. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. And then sorry, last question is you are recording video, but your intention is not to use the video. Like, do you intend to record and have clips for YouTube or
maybe
other social media?
It's in that parking lot of ideas that, I mean, I know YouTube's the number two search engine, right? I want the option if we choose to embrace that at some point. I don't know whether we'll do it or not. Stay tuned.
Jared, how about you on that?
You do video or you do?
We do video and it's hitting the same topic. You know, if we're going to stay in that 10 to 15 minute range, we may opt to just start recording the podcast as a video and releasing them. I'm recording a separate item because I'm trying to take the biggest chunk, which is long form, condense it to podcast, and then condense it again to a 3 minute video. So if we wanted a longer video content, we would just record it at that time and release it.
So I want to come back. While that question was getting asked, I wanted to pull up Ben Brandt's recent episode that I don't follow Ben's show. I don't listen to it. He's great at what he does. Obviously not my audience. His recent episode was how to pay 0% on capital gains in retirement. Would a 0% tax rate help you live an even better retirement? In this week's retirement headline, we'll explore a Wall Street Journal article titled How You Can Grab a 0% Tax Rate. If that doesn't pique your interest, I don't know what will. Gives the outline of the episode, resources and people mentioned, and then how to connect with Benjamin Brandt. Get the Retirement Ready Toolkit, follow Ben on Twitter, join the newsletter, dive deeper into retirement planning with Ben at Retirement Income University. So those are the four CTAs. Now, Ben's obviously been doing this a long time, but to Jared's point, because that is a broader audience and the podcast is more of a top of funnel activity for Ben, same with Taylor, same for Roger. He has many more different nurture options to feed that middle of funnel than what I do. Just some ideas.
Mm-hmm. Okay. John's question was pretty much along those lines, pros and cons of doing the podcast versus YouTube. So I think we got that one. Okay. Unless you want to elaborate there at all.
I do want to hit Adam's point. YouTube is the number two search engine tool that's used in the world. So people are increasingly looking to consume content in ways other than written or on web page, right? So just making sure that I think podcasting has a way to go on searchability and maybe transcription and some AI, you know, machine learning that will be able to process that a little bit better is probably going to be coming here in the next couple of years. It's a little more difficult to do searching on that, which is why your descriptions and your show notes are really important for people using that search engine. So YouTube definitely has value from an SEO perspective and an engagement perspective. So it's something to look at.
Okay, from Ben, Adam mentioned going through Pat Flynn's course when he started. Would you recommend that course for beginners or any other courses, resources?
To be fair to Pat, it has been 5 years since I went to that course, so I'm sure Pat has iterated on that. All that course did was kind of teach me that, wow, this is more complicated than I care to dive into. So it became like, I need a producer. I need an editor to help me do that. So Pat has obviously demonstrated an incredible amount of success in producing content. I like his book called Superfans. That gives you just an idea of how to create content and how to build this tribe, build this audience that becomes super fans for you, and using a platform like podcasting or fill in the blank, right? Podcasting, YouTube to do that. So yeah, it probably, I'm going to give Pat the significant benefit of the doubt that it'd be a good course to go through. I would just try and delegate as much of the process from the very beginning, whether you're choosing to go all in with something like Proudmouth, or you're trying to split the difference like what we did, try and get out of as much of it as possible for two reasons. Again, A, it's not the best and highest use of your time, and B, it provides that built-in accountability.
I just wanted to go back to that middle of the funnel question from earlier, just to make sure I'm clear on that. So was the takeaway that, yes, you would start off by making sure that you have like a functioning newsletter or some sort of like deliverable that a prospect can access before you actually start recording and sending those podcasts out? Or are you just saying, hey, if the podcast interests you, get started on that, build that after, no big deal?
Well, go ahead.
Again, I mean, it's for us. So we have a companion blog that goes with every episode. And so our middle of the funnel offer is, hey, if you want to explore this topic at a deeper level, go read the blog on it because it has more depth. Okay. And in that blog, there's CTAs that say, hey, if this resonated with you and you want more stuff like this, sign up for our email list. And then the email list allows us to prospect even further. Hey, are you ready to book an introduction with us? Or do you want to download this ebook? So we're really trying to figure out how many interactions do we need with each prospect to get them to take our desired action, which is ultimately to book an introduction with us. Okay. Whereas Adam's being so specific, he can just go right through to like, hey, do you want to solve these problems that we just talked about for an hour? Go ahead and book.
And you have time to build that middle of funnel, right? Okay. Nobody's, again, unless you're going to be spending an obscene amount of money on PPC to advertise your podcast, which podcast movement people will tell you that spending money on ads is actually not a very good conversion tool to get people to listen to your podcast. Because I thought I wanted to do that. I thought, hey, I'll do a bunch of Facebook ads. And in the podcast movement Facebook group and the content that they continue to produce, people have done that. And it, for whatever reason, it's not as successful as what you might think it would be to do a targeted Facebook ad campaign to grow your listener base. Okay. So you'll have time to, don't let creating this boutique and whole suite of content and collateral stop you from just hitting record, because okay, you'll have time to build that out.
And as you go, think about that journey, right? Is someone who listens to that episode going to be ready to book with you? Or do they need you to tell them to do something else to build the relationship?
Okay. And so the best way to look at that middle of the funnel is just a place to send them where they could essentially learn more in some sort of different medium. Then the end of the funnel would be booking that call, basically. Is that the right way of looking at it? Okay. And blog posts would count as middle of the funnel, completely fine.
Yeah, I think if you're directing them and telling them to take another action in between where they started with the podcast and, you know, book an introduction with me, that all I think would be middle of the funnel.
Okay, thanks.
Cool. Well, I think that's the end of our time. We got the time card. Adam, anything else before we close?
I was just going to look up Roger's, like, what are his call to actions? 500 episodes and still rocking. Thank you for hanging with me for episode 500. Blah, 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 blah. So now again, Roger's got a lot out there, but Roger's YouTube channel, his book, Rock Retirement, and Roger's Retirement Learning Center, which is his Rock Retirement Club, his community. Those are his three CTAs for him. But the last thing that I'll say, kind of piggybacking on what Jared had said, is that when you hit record, you will become aware of, I believe, I think, I trust that you will become aware of ideas that will be able to cross promote the podcast. Like sometimes it can seem like, I don't even know where to start. I don't even know what to expect. Trust the process. And once you hit record, it will show up. Like trust the process. That's what I'd end with.
Cool. So awesome. Thanks, everybody.